An antidote to our days of famine. Welcome to Abounding Grace. On behalf of Abounding Grace Radio, here is our teacher and pastor, Chris Gordon.
We often feel like we're going through life alone, don't we? We try to tackle problems alone. We try to solve our problems alone. And instead of fixing our eyes on this powerful Lord who has delivered us, we sink into despair. Psalm 68 is the antidote to that. Psalm 68 is the antidote to a weak, anemic view of God that we have today. And it shatters it. It breaks it. And it tells us to look at how powerful the Lord has been to deliver us and what he is continuing to do for us. It's a call. It's a summon. It's saying, bless the Lord with me. Join with me in blessing the Lord and casting your burdens upon him, casting your cares upon him. Because do you know that this triumphant, magnificent God cares for you? Have you considered? You believe that? Psalm 68 is saying that this morning. And by the end of it, I'm hoping it drives us to leave with joy and excitement and a love to worship him. Let's look at this. There's nothing like it. There's some psalms, when you read them, you just feel the power coming off the pages, the glory radiating even from the reading. In fact, it's not an easy psalm to mine through. Some think it's so disconnected that it was thought to be a bunch of first lines of poems just loosely thrown together. But I believe that tells us something. That the very structure of reading this psalm is saying something to us. It's full of that kind of excitement, and I don't know that there's anything else like it. We considered Psalm 18, and that was close. But this is, as one pastor said, full of grandeur and lyric fire with a sustained rush of triumphant praise. As we read this psalm this morning, we're invited to enter into a victory march. Did you notice that? It's a victory march. A victory march of God's supreme power to save. It's a psalm of David, and it's generally accepted that the context of this psalm is when David was carrying the ark of God back to Jerusalem, and that it was going up to rest on the hill of Zion. It was going up. The ark was going to rest, finally. Listen to the language of 2 Samuel. And when those who bore the ark of the Lord had gone six steps, he sacrificed an ox and a fatted animal, and David danced before the Lord with all his might. And David was wearing a linen ephod. And so David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the horn. As the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, they brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And when David had finished offering the burnt offerings and the peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts. I want you to imagine this for a minute. I'm pretty sure we don't realize the significance of that event. David stops and he ponders what's going on. This is a grand moment in Israel's history. Here is the moment, one of the most important moments. The ark has come to the resting place on Mount Zion. What did that mean? Why was that so significant? This was the city of the king. It went up, it ascended, and it rested. It was seated. You know what the ark was? It was the earthly, symbolic place where God was said to have dwelt. Remember in the wilderness you had, I'll talk about this in a minute, the cherubim. And when the glory came down and it rested upon the tabernacle and it filled, and the imagery was God had come down. That's why we're saying God is with us. God had come down and he took his seat symbolically there. Why was that moment so great? When it finally went up and ascended on high. Well, God had come down on Mount Sinai. Remember that? That day when everything went black and God came down and he was on Sinai. And remember what God gave to Moses? God gave to Moses instructions. I want you to build a tabernacle and I want you to build an ark. This was a movable worship facility. And at the end of Exodus, they're about to set off from Sinai, remember? And the Shekinah glory cloud comes down and it rests upon the ark, and it was awesome. God was with them. God had come down and he had dwelt with his people. Tabernacle means that. It means dwelling place. And David is rejoicing because the ark has now come. And think of its journey. Think of the journey of the ark of the Lord. It has now come and it's ascending up on high and it is resting. As he ponders this, Psalm 68 comes out. And Psalm 68, David wanted the generations of people to understand how important this moment was, that the ark had ascended to Mount Zion. And Psalm 68 is telling the meaning of this. Psalm 68 is explaining this, and it's telling us why this was so significant. Notice verse 1. Let God arise. Let his enemies be scattered. Let those who hate him flee before him as smoke is driven away. So drive them away. You know where that comes from? This was the greatest story in the Old Testament. David's quoting Moses here. And it's interesting that every time Moses, as soon as he was in Numbers 10, ready to set out for Sinai, there was a prayer that was offered up. And this was the prayer in Numbers 10 that David is quoting here, that David is citing here. Here it was. Here's Moses. They're about ready to set out. The ark of God, the pillar is in front of them. The glory is out on in front. And the Lord, Moses says, "Rise up, O Lord. Let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you." And when it rested, he said, "Return, O Lord, to the many thousands of Israel." The imagery was unmistakable. At Sinai, God got off the throne in heaven, and God came down, and God dwelt with them. And as soon as they were in this march through the wilderness, and they're heading through the wilderness, the glory cloud went up right in front of them, and the ark was paving the way right through the wilderness, the glory paving the way all the way to the promised land. Moses is moved by this, filled with excitement. Let your smoke, let your wind blow away the smoke. The earth shook. Notice how glorious this was. Let all the enemies be scattered. They melt like wax before the Lord. And so what you have in verses 7 through 10 is a victory march. Oh God, when you went out before your people, notice this. When you marched through the wilderness, the earth shook. The heavens dropped at your presence. You'll notice the imagery of rain here. The heavens dropped down. They bowed down before you. Sinai shook. That glory was so powerful. The Shekinah glory. God was with them. You ever think of how glorious his presence is? Remember Psalm 18? Smoke, when David prayed, went up from his nostrils and devouring fire from his mouth. Glowing coals flamed forth from him. He bowed the heavens and came down. Thick clouds were under his feet. He rode upon a cherub and flew. He came swiftly on the wings of the wind. He made darkness his covering. His canopy was around him. Thick clouds, dark with water. Out of the brightness before him, hailstones and coals of fire broke through the clouds. The Lord thundered in the heavens. The Most High uttered his voice. Hailstones and coals of fire. He sent out his arrows and scattered his enemies. He flashed forth lightnings and routed them. Notice the imagery. The Lord, verse 4 here, verse 4 says that the Lord, whose name is the Lord, he rode on the clouds. Verse 17 says his chariots are thousands of thousands, 20,000, thousands of thousands. You know what this was? This was the moving chariot throne of God that went before them. I don't know if we understand what this was like. Ezekiel got a glimpse of this, didn't he? You know, that moving chariot throne, Ezekiel sees this vision and he says out of the north, this great fire, and he says it was a great cloud. Notice it's all the imagery of Exodus. This great a cloud appeared and it was engulfing, raging with engulfing fire. Brightness was all around it. It radiated, and from within came the likeness of four living creatures. The four living creatures are the ones who surround the throne. Their appearance was like coals of burning fire. Like torches, he says, going back and forth, and out of the fire went lightning. They raised their wings, forming this massive firewall. Remember, the ark had to have the cherubim with wings outstretched, a massive firewall surrounding the throne. Wings that went up to shield the glory of God so that he didn't consume everything in its path for those who were his own. Wings that covered the faces of the angels and the feet because they couldn't even endure that glory radiation, if you will. He was on fire in their midst. God. The burning bush didn't burn. This was God on fire in their midst. Completely walled off in his glory, a continuous consuming fire. And Ezekiel says, you should have seen the wheels on this chariot throne. The wheels, boys and girls, hit the earth and went straight up to heaven, and the rims were awesome. Great rims. Wow, this thing. Moving chariot. Wherever the Spirit wanted it to go, it went. And when it stopped, it stopped. And the cherubim were like those holding reins. And you know what I saw, says Ezekiel? I saw someone seated there like the Son of Man. God got off the throne. And he rode before Israel in the wilderness. Make straight, said Isaiah, in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain and hill shall be made low. The uneven ground shall become level, the rough places plain, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. And all flesh shall see it, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. This is what Israel experienced in the wilderness. And then it moves in verses 11 through 14 to the conquest of Canaan. Ever wonder what that was like? He rode in front of them. Israel, it led Israel through the wilderness, and this almighty king scattered kings in the wilderness. It was as white as snow in Zalmon. There were white bones everywhere. Armies fled. Remember what Canaan said as Israel entered into the land? Remember what all the Canaanites were saying? Rahab said, we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came up out of Egypt and what you did to the kings. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted. There was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord, your God, he is the God in heavens, in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Everyone was talking about this. Everyone. Great was the army of the Lord proclaiming it. Spurgeon would translate this one. It was interesting. There was an army of preachers out there proclaiming this. Even the women in the camp are talking about this. So here's David. Here's the ark. And it's ascending up, and it's resting on Zion. And David says this was the greatest moment for David. I mean, this is the reason he danced. This is the reason he was full of joy. And that wasn't corporate worship. I just got to say that, by the way. If you want to dance on Main Street naked, go ahead. This was not in the house of the Lord. It was coming up. It was glorious. And I don't think he was naked, by the way. God came down. David is pondering this. Seeing all of this, what was his concern with Psalm 68? The later generations would see themselves disconnected from this story. That was his concern. That the boys and girls here today, when we study this in Sunday school and we study all these stories, wouldn't really grasp the meaning of this. It would just be surface nice stories. That the later generations wouldn't get this. David's concerned about that. And he's concerned that the later generations wouldn't understand what the Lord is like for his people and what he's done for his people. He's telling you and saying all this today, say, enter into this story. He's telling it like we were there. It's your story. It's my story. And you should understand something about God in this story. Do you know how much he cares? Do our lives display an understanding of that? It was hard in the wilderness, wasn't it? They faced a lot of hardships and many tests and many discouragements. And what was the truth through it all? I want everyone to look down at verse 19 today. I love verse 19. This verse has got to be one of the most moving verses I've come across in the Psalter. Notice what it says. Blessed be the Lord who daily bears us up. God is our salvation. Selah. Now that sits at the heart of the psalm. It's an amazing verse. Translators have struggled with this one a bit. The old King James says it this way. Blessed be the Lord who daily loads us with benefits, even the God of our salvation. I like that. But notice how the ESV translated it. Blessed be the Lord who daily bears us up. I believe that language of bearing is important. I think that's right. Especially because the emphasis in the Hebrew is, you'll see the word day twice. Day by day, the Lord is doing this. Day by day, the Lord is bearing some kind of load for us. You ever thought about what that load is? He is bearing a load. If you look at what Israel went through in the wilderness, you understand they were completely like sheep for the slaughter. I think the NAS gets it right. Blessed be the Lord who day by day bears our burdens. Amazing verse. The New Testament maintains that we are a wilderness people. Did you know that? Delivered. Cross event has happened. The Red Sea passing has happened. And we're going to enter into Canaan. We're going to enter into the land of milk and honey. We're going to enter into the new heavens and new earth where righteousness shall dwell really soon. But we've got this journey. We're wilderness people. And I tell you, it is really hard getting there. You ever feel that? How hard is it throughout the course of a week? And I believe what David wants us to see in this grand story of God's victory march is not just that, but the absolute and complete care of God for his people all the way through, daily bearing their burden. Israel forgot this about the Lord. Sad, isn't it? And into this victory march, he's weaving in there all sorts of glorious statements about God's care. This great God who is all-powerful and almighty and thousands of chariots all around his throne. Are you amazed at what it says, who he is focused on in the journey? All of the mighty Egyptians and commanders he took down, and then the glory cloud comes, and all of this majesty and condescension, and the psalmist screaming, it's not a distant deliverance for you. God's not way out there somewhere. What does it say? This God was not just at the head of the caravan, uncaring about the travelers, but he encompassed the whole thing. You get that imagery constantly through the wilderness travel. And verse 19 is so beautiful because who does he raise? And I'm sorry, verse 5. He's a father to the fatherless. He defends widows who have no husband to lead them. He's concerned about those of you who are alone. He's concerned about the aliens. He's concerned about placing the strangers in families. Because family is what he ordained. He loves the family. He fills our mouth with good things the whole way. I remember the Amalekites? They had come to attack. And remember what Amalek did? The Lord kept raising this with Israel. I want you to think about what Amalek did to you on the way. God split open the rock, and they're all coming to the rock for water, and he's made it a pool, and the multitudes are drinking. And here's what Deuteronomy says, what Amalek did to them on the way. How he met you on the way and attacked your rear ranks. Those who were lagging at your rear when you were tired and weary, and he did not fear God. So they came, and they started hitting the end ranks. And who stands at the end? It's the widows who have no husband to leave them, lead them. And all of the stragglers, all of those who are weak, God breaks open the rock. And what did God do? He took them down. He took them down. How many are lagging here today? You know who Satan's coming after. It's the stragglers in the church. He's coming for the weary. At the weakest moments and for stragglers, he comes for those farthest in the kingdom who are facing the weariness of the effects of it all, who lose heart, and he attacks. This is what Paul said. It's cosmic powers over this present darkness, spiritual forces in the heavenly places. Psalm 10, listen to this. He lies in wait secretly as a lion in his den. He lies in wait to catch the poor, your enemies. He catches the poor when he draws them into his net. So he crouches, he lies low, that the helpless may fall by his strength. He has said in his heart, God is forgotten. He hides his face. He'll never see. Verse 12, arise, O Lord. There it is. Arise, O Lord. Get up. Lift up your hand, O God. Don't forget the humble. Alexander McLaren said something that struck me about this in Psalm 68. God has knit himself to us, bearing our burdens, lifting our loads so that we can carry, breathing into us strength that we would endure and be lifted up to go forward. But they that wait on the Lord shall do what? Renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. And then I stop again and say, oh, that men would thank the Lord for his. David looks at the ark. It's coming up on into Mount Zion. He says in verse 15, O mountain of God, mountain of Bashan, O many-peaked mountain, mountain of Bashan. Why do you look with hatred, O many-peaked mountain, at the mount that God desires for his abode? Yes, where the Lord will dwell forever. The mountain range of Bashan was 9,000 feet. Mount Hermon and Zalmon are there. Big, glorious mountains. You know where the Lord went to dwell? Mount Zion. You know how big Mount Zion was, boys and girls? 200 feet. 200 feet. And Mount Bashan is looking at envy on Mount Zion. Mad. Why are you there? And the imagery is the Lord has come to dwell with you. The Lord has come to the weak, and that he has chosen you to dwell with you. The chariots of God are glorious, 20,000, thousands of thousands, yet the Lord came here. He's chosen the weak things of this world to put to shame the mighty. Okay, that's the glorious story. How does that connect today with us? If I had seen God come down, you might say, if I had seen this, come on, Pastor, if I had seen that, if I had witnessed that glory, yeah, I'd believe. I would have no reason to doubt. I mean, what I described is awesome. And I respond, you have been taught this story all your life. What do I mean by that? You are a vital part of this story. God passed them through the sea, and he delivered them. Red Sea, devil hurled into the sea at the end, Pharaoh cast into the sea. And he came down and he tabernacled among them. They entered, leading them all the way to the land. And finally, when they got to the land, the ark ascends on high. Look carefully at verse 18. You have ascended on high. You've led captivity captive. You've received gifts from men. Anyone recognize that verse? It's what Paul cites to the New Testament church in Ephesians 4 to say what? But to each one of us, grace was given to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore, he says, when he ascended on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts to men. Who ascended on high? Christ. He who descended, Christ, is the one who ascended far above all the heavens that he might fill all things. So the presence of the ark tells the story of Christ and his gospel. See it? Christ got off the throne and he came down here. And the first thing John says is, we beheld that glory. Why? Because he tabernacled among us. He was the tent going before us in the wilderness. His glory, we beheld that glory. And Hebrews says that he has gone before us. He who freed us at the cross has gone before us on our behalf, having become a high priest forever, and has entered into heaven and ascended on high. And what does Paul say he's doing today? Giving. What do you receive for the journey? What did he pour out upon you? The Holy Spirit. What a gift. And Psalm 68 says, this king is reigning and he's chosen you. He's chosen you. And I close by saying, do you hear the excitement in this psalm? It's full of God's glory and the powerful deliverance and the reign of Jesus Christ and his continued care for you along the way. He's not left you. You're not alone. This is why Peter would say, do you realize in all of your sufferings, this is tonight, by the way, come back to suffering. In all of your sufferings, the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. That's the imagery of the Shekinah glory in the wilderness. And this psalm is saying, wake up, Christians, and look at what you have. Has the goodness of God overwhelmed you yet? Everyone's worshiping around the throne. Guess what's going on because this king's reigning in heaven? Everyone's worshiping around the throne. See it, the procession in verse 24? Into the sanctuary, singers and players of instruments. They're blessing God in the congregations. And I love what he asks in verse 28. Summon your power, O God. The power, O God, which you've worked for us. And I think what he's saying there is, awaken in us to see the power that is always before us and given to us. I don't know if there's any prayer that's needed more today than this prayer. Everyone used it kind of earthly-wise when kings were going out to march to fight a battle physically. Cromwell and all these guys would quote this psalm, "Rise up, O God." But I believe there's a much more important application to this. Verse 11 tells us that everyone, when they understood this truth, when it got into their hearts and it got into their minds, God gave the word, and what happened? Everyone was running around, an army of preachers proclaiming it, talking about it, the women in the camps telling about it, telling their children about it, what the Lord has done for them.
Abounding Grace Radio is brought to you by Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. We are a listener-supported program. We humbly ask both for your prayerful and your financial support to keep this radio broadcast coming to you. You can go to our website at agradio.org to learn more about who we are and what we believe. Thanks for tuning in today. May the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ in all of its glory continue to richly bless you.
The Escondido United Reformed Church is a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught. I am Pastor Chris Gordon, the preaching pastor here at the Escondido United Reformed Church. We're thankful to bring Abounding Grace Radio to you and would like to invite you to our Sunday morning worship services at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. every Sunday. Visit us on the web at escondidourc.org. 1864 North Broadway is the address. Thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio.